The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. I represent Bahamian people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, bigger Bahamian town, bro. Boy, I from Bahamian, bro. Right between West and Augusta, where them two roads meet, they call it Wilkinson Street. Manners and respect was like a sign blind check. It seems the ones that come in after quick to disrespect. You see, this life in the ghetto never easy. So many hungry days break, tell it grieve me. Boy, I doing the best I can, trying to turn my dollar to $100,000. I represent the ghetto people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, bigger Bahamian, bro. Boy, I from Bahamian, bro. Don't take no back talk, no bribe or no joke. If you find fire, you're definitely find smoke. Bahamian, bro. Boy, I from Bahamian, bro. Bahamian, I say up and running. Charlie Brown say my show boy don't ever give in. 7 years of farming, watch the crops them coming. True, they see a humble thing, the lion sleeping. But they ain't for no reason, reason. Only God that I believe in, living. Watch them only passion for a season, season. Godless, I go weed them, weed them.
Good night, Bahamas, and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Valentino O'Brien, a.k.a. Scoochie Scrooge, MP. I have so many nicknames. I'm the host of the talk show Inside the Inner City at my mass every Friday at 6:30 to 8 p.m. Telephone numbers tonight are 323-6232-325-4316 and 325-4259. And you can text us, powered by BTC, at 422-GR96. And I want to thank each and every one of you who always give me a thumbs up. I appreciate each and every one of you who take the time out to listen to Inside the Inner City on a busy, you know, late Friday. And I also like to thank my guest, Ms. Juliet Starr, for coming in at such short notice to make this appearance on Inside the Inner City. And today we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful topic. You're going to really enjoy it. It's going to talk about children, but we're going to get to that in a little bit. But first, I'd like to introduce my guest, but let me introduce her. Let me just give you some of her credentials. She's very, very experienced. Here's what we have. We have Dr. Juliet Starr. She attended Pennsylvania University, Communications Academy professor. She is also an award-winning filmmaker. And the name of that film is Bearing Witness, Breaking Secrets, and Silence. Her area of expertise, man, is so much communication, interpersonal, intercultural, including DEI issues, organizational, group, public, strategic communication, relation, advertising, marketing, corporate communication. She's a journalist in the Caribbean, media effects, media ethics, race, gender, African diaspora. Excuse me, communication theory and research. Oh man, and you know, just extensive. So you've traveled the world. You have taken advantage of what the country has to offer, and now you've been contributing to the country, and you're still here today. So I just like to thank you for taking the time out to come on Guardian Radio, and I just like to ask you one question before we get to our topic. Okay, our topic for tonight is we're going to talk about nonviolent communication, the language of the giraffe. We also, gender inequality, right? And then we're going to talk about disaster and mental health, you know, because all of these ties into what is affecting our nation today. But we would like for persons who use their expertise to go and study this, and they get the research and they come back here and able to apply it. And also to make those out there in the country know what the problem we're facing in the country today. So I just want to congratulate her for a wonderful job she's been doing. I know it's going to be a very interesting show, so I'd like for her to introduce herself and to the people who would be listening to her today on Guardian Radio.
Thank you for having me on, and I look forward to our conversation. I am delighted to be back home to help wherever I can in terms of getting people to live flourishing or beautiful, wonderful lives, to solve their problems, to get others to help them solve their problems, and to develop really healthy human beings in a space called the Bahamas.
Wow. You know, off air, we were talking, and, you know, we were talking about the way the country is headed. And, you know, we're going to have to get back the basic, and you basically saying, you know, we have to get back the family structure. Why that particular, you know, of all of the background check of all the research we have been doing, right? And we have seems not being able to hit the jackpot and actually what we have to do to make a dent in the violent crimes that is plaguing our country. But you could just knock off the top and say the family structure. Could you just explain that if possible?
Yeah. Well, we all start in families. This is where we all come into the world, into a family, however that family is made up or however it is designed, organized. Some of us come into two-parent homes. Some come of us come into a single-parent home. Some of us have things, events happen in our lives that we end up with a system that tries to take care of us in certain ways. I'm talking about those who have become adopted or have been fostered. Social services, those structures and systems that we have created to assist where life events have happened and children are without their birth or natural parents. And so however our families are structured, this is where we all begin. And so if we put the resources and the attention in the family, then we can begin to do some of the healing, some of the things that families are struggling to support economically. We've had a number of events that exposed the level of help that is needed, particularly COVID-19. And we also had Hurricane Dorian. And these events shed light on some of the challenges that we face in our country, people who are in need of help in terms of supporting that family. And if you look at a lot of countries where the family has been placed at the center of the development of the country, you will find those countries have found ways to create a better environment for the development of human beings. So to develop human capital, to develop human potential, to make sure that if the mother or the father or whatever family structure the child comes into cannot support economically, socially, culturally, that there is a support system in place that will help.
Pick up the slack.
Correct. Pick up the slack, so to speak. Wow. So that we have to emphasize the family first. That's where we all begin.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, I was online, and, you know, I like to see what's good around the world in different countries, like what you speak about. Mm-hmm. You know that when I look at Japan, and I just look at it for Japan and China, in Japan, they have no janitors in the schools. Mm-hmm. No janitors. So the children are taught cleanliness. They also wear a specific set of clothes, mm-hmm. you know, white, and they teach them how to be, you know, just to, because white is very hard to clean. They teach them these basic. Mm-hmm. They teach them about respecting the elders. You know, they have parenting classes.
Exactly.
And Japan has one of the oldest, oldest. When people, how do I put it now, when they have a lot of old people.
In population, yes.
And so, the children and the nation of children who grow up under this system actually helps the older people going on the bus, Yeah, you know, it was just remarkable seeing that. And that's some of the stuff that we need to take a look at and try apply again here in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's just a prime example of what you was referring to. And I just remember I was reading up on it and I say, wow, just amazing. The kids, they don't have no janitors in the school. None whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Children does that.
Wow. You're speaking to, you know, in support. So the family core, and then you have the other structures, social institutions, education.
Yes.
So this is where the teaching comes, the community by extension, social institutions like the church. So religion can play a role. You're talking about the social setting in which, or environment in which you want to develop healthy human beings.
Yes.
And so you have to look at, well, what institutions will support and develop human beings so that the majority of the population, I would like to say all, but all is kind of idealistic, you know, it's utopian. We can aim for all, and that is the goal of most countries that have tried to change and have looked at, you know, the Scandinavian countries, in particular Finland, which is rated always number one in terms of happiness.
Yes, happiness, Finland,
yes,
wow.
Yes. But they did a lot of things, you know, Sweden, Norway, these countries restructured. And it took a very long, it took a while, the government and all the other social institutions had to get involved. Citizens had to agree that they would make these kinds of sacrifices. And one of the things that people don't like to hear, so you have to give up something, and a lot of things, these things cost. And so taxation is part of the system. You're going to get a lot of taxes, and those taxes go to the institutions that need them, including the family. So you put in place daycare. That's free.
Mm-hmm.
So poor people who have children will have free daycare so that they can work and their kids are being taken care of. They're getting a good education. You have an educational system where you are emphasizing all areas that would develop a whole human being, not just academics, but vocational and all the other areas. And you create a system or society where the emphasis is on developing human potential, developing human capital in a healthy way. And if we were to look at that focus, of course, as I said, it's going to require us to give up a lot.
Yes,
I agree. To sacrifice a lot.
Yes.
And in a society like the Bahamas, which is driven by capitalism, that is
very difficult. It's very difficult. That's our biggest problem. Capitalism is our biggest problem. The political parties and government coming in and changing strategy and changing the projection of a good program that could be very beneficial. But these countries talk about Sweden and Finland. They set aside their differences and say, hey, we got to make this country great. Mm-hmm. We want a better society. So they gave up those capitalism. They might still have it, but we're going to come to one accord. We have a younger generation, older generation. You know, what we're going to do. You know what they did? Like you said, now they are what, the happiest?
Now, Finland is always rated number one.
Yes.
In happiness.
In happiness. That means the citizens, mm-hmm. you know, are really happy with their lives. Wow, just amazing. Just amazing. Yeah. Oh, wow. So, Mr. Orr, let me ask you a question. How long have you lived in this, abroad?
More than 30 years.
30 years. Wow. Mm-hmm. 30 years. Wow. And you did all of this?
I did.
Wow. That's amazing.
But I did start here. I did teach in the Bahamas. I was a journalist here in the Bahamas. And so I spent some of my early formative years here after getting my first degree.
Wow. Wow. And it was a life changer having that opportunity.
It was a life-changing experience, yes.
Wow. And you have learned so much from those different ventures and different countries you have been, and you came back home because you love home. The home call you.
Yes. As we say, my navel string is here.
Yeah, you gotta feel it. Don't care how long you go. You gotta come back. You gotta come back because you come back for a cause.
Yes, I do.
Okay, I want to just say thank you. You're just amazing. So, Mr. Orr, we're gonna talk about some of your expertise.
Okay.
And you just name a list of your expertise, but one we want to talk about today, we want to talk about the non-violent communication, the language giraffe. And then we're going to talk with, in our second segment, we're going to talk with the gender inequality, and then our third, disaster of mental health, because we know that all of this ties into mental health. It's what you eat, you put in your body, all of this stuff that leads to violent behavior. Mm-hmm. So, Ms. Starr, where do you want to start from today?
No, let's start in the, since you're at the violent, let's talk about nonviolent.
Let's talk about the nonviolent.
So nonviolent communication and why it is so important. We live in very violent societies. Most Western societies are violent. The Bahamas is considered a Western society. And so we bring this violence to communication, how we communicate. And so the premise is that the words that we use in terms of how we speak to each other, the tone of the words we choose to use to convey our thoughts and our feelings, when they imply that that there is wrongness or something that is bad in the other person or on the other person's part, then you're going to get a certain kind of violent reaction from that person. And so we have created a very violent planet based on the way we communicate with each other. Mm. Violent families, violent society. And these things are supported by our entertainment, which is very violent. And
you say our entertainment.
Yes, television, sports. violence is at the heart. If you look at what movies do we really like?
Action movies. We like to see a lot of killing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so when you look at how our communication or the language that we use to communicate is at the heart of our interactions as humans, then that drives a lot of the violence that we have in our lives.
Because we go from 0 to 100.
Very quickly.
Even over a basketball game. We're talking with LeBron James and Jordan, and then that could go from 0 to 100.
Very quickly. Well, then let's talk about traffic. Early morning traffic, after that, okay.
Oh,
yes,
mama.
I am sure.
That's just what you're talking about.
We have all had those conversations with the other drivers who cannot hear us. And sometimes we do shout it out.
What are you doing? Can't drive. You don't even cut yourself.
And we do. It's so very violent. We react. And so, you know, these are things that do not foster open, honest communication, communication of compassion, communication of love, the language of the giraffe. This is the work of Marshall Rosenberg.
Marshall Rosenberg.
And he comes out of the era of the 60s, the nonviolent movement, mm-hmm. Martin Luther King, Gandhi in India, in South Africa, Nelson Mandela. So the idea that we can change our behavior from violence to nonviolence. And communication is a human behavior. Mm-hmm. We forget that oftentimes, that communication
is a human behavior.
And so if we are speaking from the heart, then we would not use violent language. We would use the language that would encourage people to openly express their feelings and their thoughts and communicate with each other in a way that we would all flourish and grow. Because you would understand what my needs are, I would understand what your needs are.
By communicating with non-violently.
Yes.
It makes sense, you know, because mm-hmm. I've learned to do that over the years. You know, I had my share of this same topic you're talking about mm-hmm. now. You know, I was very aggressive, you know, mm-hmm. but eventually I learned that if I calm myself and let one person talk first, without me interrupting that person, just let them talk, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. And then when they're finished, then let me give my little piece.
Yeah.
And then and back and forth, and guess what, you know what? We solved the problem.
Because you're listening with your heart.
Yes, ma'am, it's true. Mm-hmm. Even with police officers. Yeah. One time ago, I was very aggressive with police officers. When they pulled me, what you pulling me for, man? You know, and then the police would get aggressive because I was the one who was aggressive, or the police was the one who was aggressive. So we go back and forth, and then, exactly. you know what ended up happening? I ended up picking up charges because
It escalates
because mm-hmm. instead of me de-escalating the situation mm-hmm. or the police officer de-escalating the situation, we back and forth, and eventually mm-hmm. he get the power, mm-hmm. and then we end up in a back and forth. He mm-hmm. curse me, I curse mm-hmm. him, then I'm mm-hmm. charged before the courts, mm-hmm. and et cetera. Yes, mm-hmm. ma'am, I understand everything you're saying. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, ma'am.
Yeah, so because you're looking at things in black and white. You're either good or bad, right or wrong. Things that are appropriate or inappropriate, normal, abnormal. When we come from those kind of extremes,
yes, ma'am.
Instead of seeing... not seeing the person as the enemy, mm-hmm. Valuing them as a human being with basic needs. All of us have universal needs to be love, safety.
Yes, ma'am.
These are the things, you know, our basic safety, food, shelter, water, these are the things that we try as humans to achieve first. And then we move up the hierarchy until we get to belonging and self-esteem and self-fulfillment.
That's like building character.
Yes, yes. So when we take responsibility for the way that we interact, and we take responsibility for what we do, we take responsibility for feeling something. No one can make you feel angry.
No one can make you feel angry.
You feel angry by yourself.
That is true, you know.
Yeah, no one can. You cannot blame people for your behavior. You cannot blame someone and say that they made you do that. They did not. You did that.
Because you could ignore it.
You could ignore it. You can walk away. You can not react in a violent way, correct?
Just don't say nothing.
Just don't say anything.
And I've learned that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We put the responsibility and the power in other people to do something that make us feel something, and it's not true. We feel it ourselves, and we are the ones who are in control of our emotions, in control of our behavior. I didn't make you pick up a gun. I didn't make you smash something. I didn't make you throw anything. I didn't make you feel angry. So the question really is, what need is not being met? Which of your needs is not being met that you react in such a violent way?
It goes deep.
It goes deep, yes.
Something start off early in childhood. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Wow.
And so we have to learn to unlearn the language that makes us very violent.
Wow.
Our thoughts, our feelings, yes. Because we have been educated in the language of the jackal, which is the aggressive way to communicate. Rosenberg used two animals. He used the giraffe for the language of love and compassion, and that's because the giraffe
is a humble,
has the largest heart of any land animal. Yeah, you can Google it. And so,
the giraffe,
yes. And so because of that, he used that as a symbol of love, of compassion. And the jackal is a very aggressive animal. And so he used the jackal as a symbol of aggressive language, aggressive communication. The way that it's very authoritarian. How we raise our children, you know, we have these sayings, children should be seen and not heard. We still have that saying.
Yes,
ma'am. Speak when you're spoken to. This does not encourage our children to flourish. It makes them fearful. It makes them feel less than and unwanted. And so when we think about the words that we use to talk to our kids, our children, we have to think about the violence that is in the words or accompanies how we talk.
Mr. I agree with you fully. And it's amazing that you came back after 30 years and already, you know, you've done your studies and your research, and now you're knocking points that are actually true. You know, our biggest problem today is when you look at kids walking to school with their parents, you know, and it's amazing to see some moms. You know, I'm not talking down on them, you know, not for a minute. But what you're talking was actually true, because sometimes, you know, I'd be standing up on the road and parents would be walking with their children, and sometimes the children would drop back, you know, they're on their phone. You know, the mother's on the phone, she's talking, and the child is in the back, and she's not paying attention to the traffic, you know. So the child is in the back, and the child doesn't really know how to walk the streets, you know, but the mother's preoccupied on the phone. And when someone say, hey, the little girl in the back, watch over the little girl. And when they turn around, they see that, and they look at the person standing who's telling them like that, they would go and chastise the child. When I tell you, fall behind me, and you know, and I tell you, then they'd say it'd get, for this little small thing, Mr. Dahl, they would end up saying an F word to the child.
Exactly.
And a little spank, just because you was not paying attention to your own child walking the street.
Mm-hmm. Very violent.
And then you look at the child's face, you know, they start to shed tears and, I want to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because they made the child feel very bad. They made the child feel as though they did something wrong. Very moralistic, very authoritarian. And when you use that kind of language, as I said, you're going to put fear in the child. You're going to develop very violent children, because they're going to do the same thing, and a cycle develops, and you're going to find that they do the same thing with their children.
With their children.
Yeah.
So that's why we end up the way we is.
But a very violent society.
I don't know if you want to take this call. You want to take this call? Or you want to... It's up to you. We don't have to take the call. If you want to take the call? Because I really want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, well, it's your show.
No, yeah, but you're my guest. This is your show for right now.
I mean, if you... I wouldn't mind hearing.
Okay. Call her coming right now. I just want to make sure. Yeah. Go ahead, call her. You're on Inside the Inner City talking to Miss Dawes. Good night. Good night. You have turned on your radio.
Talk. You know why so long with you and your guest, Scoot?
Yes, sir. Good night.
Good night. We need justice, law, and order in this country. Miss, what's your name again?
Store.
Okay, Miss Store. Tell me something. Now, let me explain something. We have a violent society. And what I've experienced, I worked with children. And I'm physically blind, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What I've found out, children are angry, and they have a reason to be angry. Some of them be hungry. They can't look to somebody unless that person are loving and caring to do something for them. The other thing is, right, they has in this country, people would want and tried and molested youngsters that has some of them angry. Nobody for them to go to. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Sometimes they don't have the sense to go to find the right people, even the police. You know, so sometimes they're afraid to even... Some of them are afraid to go to the police. So my thing is here is that some situations are in their mind, and it makes them angry to know that what they have to go through. Some of them are afraid, and that also makes them angry. They don't get to the feeling they need, so it makes them angry. It doesn't say that they want to be angry, but their thoughts and what they have to go through, they have no place, you know what I'm saying?
I do.
For a refuge.
Yes, life experiences have made them angry and bitter, and they feel unloved and unwanted, and they don't know to try to. And we have a lot of young people in this country, which takes us into the second half of the show, which is gender-based violence.
Go ahead. We get a lot of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the gender-based violence and the work that I'm doing in gender-based violence.
Talk about that.
Yes. And so what you are saying, sir, is spot on. You have your finger on some of the challenges and problems with some of our young people who have been molested, who have had so many things happen to them. Poverty is also one of those violent
main
things
reason,
that we,
one of the main
that we don't
reason.
Talk about. Yes, and yes. Poverty is violence.
Yes.
And so, as I said, when you don't meet basic needs, you don't have shelter, you don't have food, you don't have water, you don't have clothing, and so on. And those impact the development of any human being.
Development.
Especially for children. So, yes, we do have a lot of angry, wounded, injured children. And we have to understand that we have, if we want to change them, again, we have to look at what are some of the things we can do collectively as a society to change the families in which they live, the environment in which they are being raised.
The community
and how the community can be supported. And so all of the things that we're talking about tonight are connected to the violence that we eventually have.
So it's no one thing, it's all it is put together.
It's multifaceted. Yes. Yeah. There are many reasons why. Circumstances.
Poverty.
Poverty being one of the...
Undeveloped community.
Undeveloped communities, which is tied to poverty.
Lack of education.
Which is tied to poverty.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We could go on
and
on.
We could go on and on and on. And so he's very right. Yes. The caller has put his finger on some of the challenges. The question is, what are we going to do? And children have to feel that they can trust adults so that they can feel that they have a safe space to talk to them without feeling that they will be blamed or that someone is going to punish them or that they will be judged because they are not at fault. Something happened to them. Someone did something to them. And they are unfortunately feel as though there's no one out there who will listen to them first in a safe space and then do something. Don't just listen to my story. Get me help. Find a way to also bring in those institutions. But a lot of children don't feel they have a safe space.
No, they don't.
They don't feel like they have someone they can trust to actually talk to.
They don't. That's why I invested my time in coming with strategy. That's why I'm working in the community. I'm developing the community to put the needs and wants of the community at the fingertips of the neighborhood resident. We have, so far, we're going to have 3 community centers that are being built in the Lewis Street, Hay Street,
fantastic,
and Taylor Street area to deal with those kids, that make sure they have an organization to talk to and a
safe
team
spaces.
Of people. You know,
yes.
We have Ms. Sheila Pritchard, we have Mitzi Burrows, we have a lot of pastors, we have a lot of people from Rotary coming in and just lecturing the kids. And these problems you're talking about, ma'am, and what Brayman said is actually true. A lot of these kids are being abused. You know, we have a high abusive rate right now in the country. Mm-hmm. When I look at social service, they talk about the stats, you know, about the abuse. And what you're going to find out is these same kids who are being abused now, in the next 10, 15 years, they'll be the ones who are committing indictable offenses and serious crimes in the country.
Yeah. It's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle. Yeah. So we have to take this information that you are giving to the general public, and we have to run with it. And I hope that those who are listening, you know, can probably get your contacts and see how they can assist you in your wonderful program. Because I'm not going to leave you alone, because this is a part of my agenda to bring people like yourself who understand the problem, know the solution, you understand, and you're putting it in the work. And the thing about it, you can see that your heart is in this.
Yeah.
You know, most people don't understand that this year is a task given to you from the universe. We don't have to say God. I'm going to say the universe is given you from the universe, because he or she wants us to be a big brother, to be a big sister, to be a godfather or a godmother to the less wanted. And that's what the Christ said, you know, do unto the, what you do for the children, you do for me. You understand? So we all understand it. So I just want to give a thumbs up. And what again is your organization name again, Ma?
So I have created a company called Category D6.
Category D6.
And the project that we're working on in the mental health space, all of these projects are interrelated.
Ma'am.
In the mental health space, post-Hurricane Dorian. So when Hurricane Dorian struck Abaco, Grand Bahama, I was actually scheduled to come back to the Bahamas on the day.
Wow.
To do research in gender-based violence. And so when the hurricane came, of course, I couldn't travel. And so what I did was I put my research down, because I was on a sabbatical from the university where I taught, and I decided to just come home and volunteer.
Just came, just because you heard about the disaster.
Because I heard and saw, this is home.
That hurt your heart.
It hurt my heart. And so when I saw the pain and the suffering, I said, no, humans first.
One second right now. I like what you said. Just 2 weeks ago, you know, I mean, I was talking about the Haitian crisis, and I explained to them what Haiti is going through as a nation, you know, and I was saying the why, you know, I'm letting people know that there's a why, the way the country, it is the way it is today, and it's the reason why they're coming over here. I'm not taking them for them coming over here. I'm explaining the why, the why. And you know what I get to find out? A lot of people, you know, like the hurricane, right? Just because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they come in illegally. You know, we're not saying that you come here illegally and you expect to stay here. And, you know, you know, and me saying that, you know, they damaging our healthcare system, they're putting a screen on us. And I would agree 100%. But the thing is, it still comes down to you being a human.
Humanity, yes.
Because the Father's going to judge us, okay, on that day. And you're going to be judged. And if we're here in this country and... if we're in this country and we're going to hate on other people, they might be hating on us. That don't mean we got to hate on them. And not everyone is going to hate on you from one country, because not everyone is wicked. Not everyone is good. Not everyone is a saint. You understand? Even in the Bahamas, you know, you are people here who don't believe in God. You are people here who is atheist. You are people here, you know, but you still have, you have good people here, bad people here. You have a mixture of people. You know, you can't say the whole Bahamas is Christian. The whole Bahamas is not Christian. All right, but we go as a Christian nation, and Christian values. And when we say that, that means we have to think at us from a human standpoint. And you hear what you just said? You came from the university on a grant. You decided to put that down, but you went to Apico.
I did.
And most people would say, well, the Haitian nationals. Why you want to go to Apico? Tell me a reason.
Humans first. It's you know, at the core of all that we do is our humanity. And so if we cannot love each other, have compassion for each other, particularly during times of disaster, times of crisis, then we have to question our purpose. Who are we?
Mm-hmm.
And why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
And so I came because I saw the need. And I know that, yes, my two little hands, but, you know, I could still contribute. I can give you water. I can give you clothing. I can give you some kind words. I can hug you. I can listen to you. And that's what I did. And in listening to them, I heard their story and I saw their pain and their suffering. And that moved me to want to help them long term. Because when we have a disaster or crisis, we only see the short term impact. Not the long term.
Not the hurry the people are going through. Losing their loved one, losing all.
All of their possessions.
Behemoths, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Who you are. Because, you know.
The whole Apico get ripped off.
Take away the labels, take away the categories, human beings.
Human beings.
So human beings were impacted. And we're looking at the long, so in the project, we're looking at the long term impact of disaster on people's mental health.
Wow.
And looking at the long term impact of first Dorian, followed by COVID-19, we have a lot of people who are hurting.
Yeah, no.
Who are depressed, who still have anxiety and panic attacks, who are still, you know, not well mentally. Their well-being is.
Yeah, I know the former. Yes. I know the former prime minister who put the lockdown on us. When that happened, you could see a lot of people, you know, like you said, that would affect them, and it's still affecting them, you know.
And that's what the project is about. It's trying to raise awareness of the level of hurt and suffering that people are still experiencing. And, of course, it has a cost. It's a cost to national development. It's a cost to Abaco and Grand Bahama. It's a national cost because the country had to bear that cost.
Yes.
And the country is still bearing that cost. And will continue because some people cannot function. Some people are taking off time from work. First responders who have been impacted because of all of the loss that they saw.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them experienced loss themselves. And so you're dealing with two things, myself and my family, and I'm trying to help others.
Wow.
And, you know, when these things build up over time, when that depression and anxiety you have no one to talk to.
Yeah.
And, you know, our culture is we don't talk our business, especially when it comes to mental health. People don't want to talk about how they are feeling depressed because, there's the stigma around mental health. And part of the project is trying to move us away from the stigma of mental health being something negative. Because it really is a part of being whole and well in terms of our overall well-being. So mental health and physical health are twins of the same coin or belong to two sides of a different coin or two sides of a same coin. And so when we think about mental health, we should really think about mental health like physical health. Like we go to the doctor for physical annual, we should go to the doctor for a mental annual. You know, all of the people that we've interviewed, we've talked to, both the survivors and the experts, are saying that we need to understand the importance and significance of mental health more in this country. And we need to make sure that people have the resources so that they can get the help that they need long term.
That's awesome. We're going to take this next call because the phone line is lighting up. Okay. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside the Inner City on Guardian Radio. You're talking to Ms. Starr, who is doing a fantastic job. And you should get her number and try to be a partner. Assist any way you can because we need persons who came here with good intentions with their heart. You know, and it means well.
Good afternoon, Ms. Starr.
Good afternoon, you as well.
First point I want to make is that Haiti, back in the day, I used to help the Bahamas a lot.
That's what I tell
them. When they first became independent.
I was referring
that.
To, go ahead, sir. Go ahead, talk. Sorry for interrupting you.
We got all our produce, everything from Haiti. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the government is the persons we need to really look at, because they should have nationalized these persons who were here for a long period of time. The guy's a guy I born in the 82.
Yes, sir.
So I went to come Michael Bryan.
Yes, sir.
So you know how that goes.
Yes,
sir. I said,
yes, sir.
I have a lot of Haitian friends, and these guys now on the defense force, on the police force, all of that type of stuff right now, man. If the government had did what they had to do back in the day, we would not have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because even the community would have helped us as well.
Yes, sir.
To keep them from coming around here, you know, the bad apples or whatever, or the person trying to come in illegally.
Yes, sir.
Because they would have noticed this would have been their home as well, sir.
Yes.
And they would have taken pride in protecting their home.
Yes, yes.
You understand? So previous governments, all of them have let us down
in
this instance of nationalizing these persons and getting them to be behaving citizens, man, because they still here.
Yeah, and we can't do anything to get rid of them.
Down the shanty homes, where are they going?
Right back.
Somewhere else.
Right back to their family or friends, et cetera, right back in their community.
Exactly.
And it'd be worse again.
Man, and all of them ain't bad, man.
No.
Being that, and remember by Cornliffe, the shanty town used to be right there.
Yeah.
The Cornliffe Bakery.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, man, from coming from school, go around there, chill out, tell my family reach home, like, go home.
Yeah, man, they're good people. You understand?
I never had no problems with nobody of the Haitian community, with none of them.
Real talk.
Now, you have some bad sex.
Yes,
you understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
but
sir.
They're not all bad. These I think the only other problem behemoths have is when they bring that certain type of culture.
Yeah.
It's extreme.
Yes.
And we are laid back, peaceful type of people, which we were, I should say.
We ain't that no more.
Yeah, we ain't that no more. But we need to try. Government need to just try nationalize these people.
Yeah.
Get them together, go there, talk to them, talk to all the leaders in their community. And try to nationalize the person who's been there a long time, man.
Yes, sir.
It's getting ridiculous now, man.
Yeah, people too.
Yes. These people too, man.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you very much. You did a wonderful job. You know, the guys are behemoth. And see, he said, that's what I was trying to tell the behemoth people, how Haiti was helping us out way before all this stuff. We were Jamaica and Haiti and stuff. We were working together as a team. Then when this independent stuff come around, you understand that mess it up, then they put the embargo on Haiti and France, you know, and then that break the dollar value. And Haiti was one of the richest countries around that Pacific time. That's what people don't understand. They were helping all kind of countries all over the world. Now what we getting now is the country's destabilized and the people are leaving from their homes, running, looking for a better way of life. And then they're putting screen on a lot of people. But this is what we're also talking to.
Yes.
Could you imagine all those stagnated young Haitian nationals who are in the country right now, who don't have no one to turn to, no one to look to?
Exactly.
And they ain't going nowhere. And the law can't do nothing with them.
And hence the violence.
And it continues the violence.
Because they don't have people who understand or want to talk to them to understand, to use the kind of language, to give them the opportunities, to give them the resources. And we get back to family, you know, in terms of the support that they should have had all along the way. You know, he raised a good point that you have to support and put in place so that they become
a part
of the country.
Of the country.
And that they contribute in various ways and give them the opportunities like anyone else.
Yes.
You know. Yes, we can debate the issues of legality, but that's not what we're talking about.
That's right.
We're talking about human beings.
That's right.
And we're talking about the needs that they have and how, as human beings, we should address them, because a part of the story of the violence and the gangs is the language that is used to ostracize, to vilify, to the xenophobic kinds of language that, you know, they are less than, they are not us. They are different. Their culture is different. They're humans. We all have cultures.
Yes. Yes.
And so my way of doing things is different from your way of doing things.
Yes. And I want to get this point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't criticize no one who calls on the show, but I also want to let the general public know this. We might be saying voodoo. If you look at Christianity, they could be saying the same thing with Christianity.
Exactly.
If you look at Christianity
again,
goes back with some dirty, dirty stuff.
Again, we get back to, again, the language of the jackal. You know, what's appropriate or inappropriate, what's good or what's bad. We, you know, the judgmental moral decisions that or judgments that we make about people. They're different, and so we other them. We make them less than. We make them
different. And they're looking at ourselves.
And they're looking,
yes. We think,
like we are much better.
Yes, but we got to protect the country. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about the illegal people coming in. You know, we're just talking naturally about it.
You know, migration is going to be around for as long as we are around.
We come here migrating all. Some of us were here and we migrated, you know.
Yes, exactly.
That was the great expansion.
Exactly. So, you know, countries solve it in different ways. There are ways that have worked for some countries better than others. And this is something that he said that the government and the policymakers have to think about.
Yeah, they fail on it and they should
how to address it.
And you're a prime example. You know, you left the Bahamas and you seek a better opportunity to get education and get your degree and et cetera. So you
benefited from someone else's country.
That's right. That's right. And we have a lot of Bahamians living in around the world, Italy, United States, Canada.
Migration, you know, out-migration is really big here as well. You know, a lot of Bahamians, as you're pointing out, have left, and they're not returning. They're living in other countries, and they're benefiting from the country's
natural resources. So, like you said, migration is a part of it. You just would like it to be done legally, but the current circumstances facing Haiti now with desperation. Listen to me, bro.
Yeah, it's going to take a
If people are running away from violence.
But I like your reference to the relationships that we had with Haiti and other countries.
That's right, Jamaica.
Yes, you know, we have personal story. I have a personal story. My grandfather used to run, was a boat captain. He used to run between Haiti and Cuba and the Bahamas.
And that's the connection, right? That was the connection back.
That was the connection back.
And last week I said the same thing.
Yeah.
We had a connection.
He was a Ragged Island boat captain. Yes. And he ran from Ragged Island to Haiti to Cuba and back to the Bahamas.
And they were all connected. If you look at Sir Randall, our greatest civil rights leader who fought like Pompey, you would see in his journals the lawyers who came to represent him. Jamaican lawyer. He had 80, you know, and et cetera.
Yeah.
You know?
But again, you know, it's how we see other people.
Right.
And how we judge them. And, you know, if we use nonviolent communication, the core of it is to treat humans with compassion and love. And the way that you do that is through the way you talk.
Yes, ma'am.
And when you talk about people, whether they're Haitians or Bahamians or Jamaicans or Trinidadians or wherever they are from, there's a way that we have to make sure that we look at them as wonderful human beings.
Yes, ma'am. And that's like I said, there are bad people in every country, in your family. You understand? Mm-hmm. You get good people. You have 80 years. You have... You understand what I'm saying? So don't think the Bahamas is just this perfect place where everyone is so good. If it was so good, you think we'd have all this crime that we're facing in this country, all this corruption and all this stuff? We might be more cursed than Haiti. You understand what I'm saying? We just get a different punishment. Yeah. You understand, Mr.
We have our problems.
We get our problems. They don't take it all so gravy over here.
Yeah,
we have our problems because a lot of poverty over here. We have a lot of unemployment over here. We have a lack of education and all kind of stuff going on in our country.
Unemployment, underemployment, yes.
You understand? High murder rate. So
incest, sexual assault.
You know, brothers killing brothers.
Domestic violence.
Domestic violence.
Yesterday with brothers, the two brothers. Exactly.
I just talked about this last week on the show.
But that just happened yesterday. And two brothers, teenage, literally in Eleuthera.
Now, let's just think about that. Two brothers. How could get to a point where two brothers could actually get to a point where one is going to stop? This is what you're talking about,
Rachel. What I'm talking about is back to the family.
Knowing that your brothers.
How were they raised? What language was used? How did the people in their family who were the parental figures, the authority figures, how did they talk to them?
Right then and there.
Right.
Whilst they was present.
While they were growing up.
Yes, ma'am.
While they were growing up. What kind of language that you talked about the parents who walk their kids to school and they're on their cell phone and then they turn around and then they start berating
and
yelling and swearing, and that's violent language. That's aggressive language. So what you're really saying is, I want you to be a violent human being.
That's right.
And so, yes, how else is he going to respond to whatever? Because he was not taught how to express his needs in a healthy way.
Wow.
And so he resorted to what he was taught. Violence.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to take this next call if you want to. Look like people want to have this good discussion. So go ahead. Join the show. Good night. You're on Inside the Inner City. Ms. Starr is waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening, Scrooge. How you doing?
I'm fine. Good evening to you as well.
Yeah, I want to say good evening to my former high school teacher.
Listen. People to be listening to see that. Go ahead. Go ahead, my brother.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice, Ms. Starr.
Thank you. And who do I have the pleasure, if you don't mind?
It's even more of a pleasure to hear the cause that you are standing up for, Ms. Starr.
Thank you.
Yes, Mom, I respect that 100%, Mom, because if there's one thing we suffer from in this country, is ignorance. Mm-hmm. And they say ignorance is bliss, but I believe the Bahamian people just love to remain ignorant on the Haitian issue. Mm-hmm. You know, because we really need to be taught to appreciate Haiti the way we need to as black people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, Haiti played a very important role. Mm-hmm. In the history of this region.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they need to be respected
for
their accomplishments. You know, they are African just like us.
Yeah.
And it's time we start to act like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Tribes.
You see, so mm-hmm. I mean, so it's shameful. You know, to be honest with you, it angers me. And I'm embarrassed to be a part of this people who they call the Bahamians when they carry on the way they carry on like that. I mean, because to be honest with you, it is inexplicable, you know. Mm-hmm. But like I said, what we need to do is we need to kill the ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we need to stop all the ignorant talk that leads to that negative relationship mm-hmm. with our brothers and sisters from Haiti. All right, because like I said, they are great people. And we need to respect them, and we need to try our best to understand their situation. And start blaming them mm-hmm. for the circumstances within Haiti. But like I said, once again, Scrooge, I'm happy you have my wonderful teacher on from St. Augustine's College.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Ms. Starr, I didn't get to learn chess back then, because I'm trying to learn it now. You know, and I regret not ever taking part in the chess and playing chess, Ma, because it's a wonderful game. And
it is.
Like I said before, Mom, I really love the cause that you're standing up for, Ms. Starr. And I hope to see you again one of these days, Mom, so you can see who I am.
Don't go yet. She wants to find a nickname. She asked
me.
He has already indicated he's not going to say it on
the air. Okay, sorry, bye-bye. Very back, Mom.
Well, I will invite you to join our cause. We do have a website, and it's categoryd6.com.
CategoryD6.com.
Yes.
All right, Mom, I'll go and write it down.
And please go
right
and put in your information so I can know who you are eventually.
Mr. I mean, but the cause that you are standing up for, Mom, is something that I have a passion for.
Thank you.
So I definitely will do my best to try and link up with you so we can work together, Mom.
I hope so, because we need everyone, all hands on deck.
Yes, Mom, but like I said, we really need to kill the ignorant black people.
Yes,
you know, we are one people, and I mean, come on, Mom, we really need to understand the circumstances of Haiti for what it really is, so we can stop being so stupid, man, for lack of a better word.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, and like I said, Ms. Starr, it's wonderful to hear your voice again, Mom.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right, you take care, Ms. Starr.
You too.
And respect, Scrooge.
Yeah, man, enough respect, man. You did a wonderful job. And, you know, like, going back to Haiti, what I was trying to tell people, I did the research. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did all the research when I had they was helping with Cuba, Venezuela, all about the Bahamas, when they did with Toussaint. And then when you look at the extensive, what they did to America, you know what I mean? I mean, it's just amazing to see how these people was all over the world. Now we are here, and we understand what the problem is. But we need to understand the history.
Exactly.
When you understand the history and you see what they facing, that the position they're in now is not that they put themselves in a position, it's the world powers that put these things on them to hurt them and bring their dolly wally down and put a screen, and then putting the screen on us all over the world. But if you look at the history, these people fought for the rights of black people all over the world. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
No, no. And both you and the caller, my former student from SAC, you know, made excellent points. We need to understand our history, and we need to teach that history. But the caller also spoke about respect, which is part of the language of the giraffe, the language of compassion,
the
non-violent language. And he also spoke about blaming, which is the language of the jackal, the judgment, the blaming others.
The game.
Right. When we blame others, when we criticize, we judge and demand that they do things, you know, when you do that to people, you know, they're going to respond in a negative way.
Yes, ma'am.
But when you change and you respect them and you pay attention and you listen and you value them, you learn a lot.
And make your heart skip a couple beats.
Exactly, because now you are empathizing with them. You understand what their pain and suffering is like. You understand their needs. And Haiti has a lot of needs right now. Haitians have a lot of needs. It's a beautiful country. I've been there twice. And it's unfortunate the circumstances that they are in. It will take a lot of work and a lot of other countries and people helping. Haiti will not be able to do it by itself.
No, because of the destabilization the world nations have put on Haiti. Yeah. And I just want to say this also. Caller coming to you right now. Just give me a second. And when we take a look at the whole dynamics of it, right, we can't get rid of those people who are already in our system legally and those coming illegally who got in the system. There's no way possible you're going to be able to deal with the system. All we can do is stop the illegal entry, protect our borders. But whilst we're here, we're going to have to slow down as much as possible. But we have to regulate a lot of people here in this country so that, like you say, they don't be in the position they're in. Because guess what? It's going to be a problem to all of us.
Then you see the social impact.
Yes, it's all over. It's all over. It's all over. You look in the news, you see the last name, and then we listen. Okay, how's this? I used to get locked up a lot, Mr. That's how come I get, you know. And when we're in the station, you have guys who have been in the country from the early 70s and 80s, and when they're there, they have no documents. Right? Exactly. But the country can't deport them. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't have no one to sign their bail because, you know, they don't have no documents, but they're here, but they can't ship them back. So some of them stay in prison and et cetera, and they get worse, and then they don't have no one to help them. Now, we have our own problems here in the Bahamas, but we're just speaking naturally.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And this is something we have to take a look at.
Yeah.
You know, because all this is a part of our big problem in the country. Mm-hmm. These people are here. We are being in the same position as these people looking for a way better life.
Mm-hmm.
But you could imagine the stress that we are facing.
And that's the mental side of it. Yes. So go ahead.
You want to take this last call?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside in the City.
In the store.
Yes.
Okay.
I wanted to say the last caller was a soccer, right?
Yes.
I used to say George, so it was a soccer or the Giant.
Oh, my gosh.
That agree on something. It got to be a good cause.
It's got to be a good
cause. It got to be a good cause, man. We don't agree on nothing. That's what I try out in there for y'all go, bud.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Where we at now? Because I really love this conversation. You're so extensive with your research and stuff like that. So where we at now?
We are, in terms of the question where we at, are you referring to my work?
Where we are in the show.
So I would like people to help us in the mental health space, in terms of supporting the project.
Mm-hmm.
As I said to the caller from Zach, my former student, we do have a website, and it is categoryd6.com, and we would appreciate people helping us raise funds. We are trying to not just do the educational campaigns. We are creating documentaries so that people can understand. We're also doing a docu-series, which are smaller, shorter pieces because our attention span has changed.
Yes,
and so we are more of a TikTok world. And so we are hoping to raise awareness and build the educational campaigns around disaster mental health and then mental health in general to change the culture, to get people to understand the importance of mental health, and to build the capacity for the future. Because we are a country that is in Hurricane Alley. And so we will have more hurricanes. Some may be on the strength of Hurricane Dorian, and that's something that we have to prepare for. According to the last tally, $3.4 billion is a lot for this country. And that income, you know, that's only that was tallied for the cost of Hurricane Dorian. In terms of the physical and infrastructural, but the intangible cost, I haven't heard a figure yet.
Wow.
And you're talking about people who lost lives and livelihood and jobs and businesses and loved ones. And how do you work out a cost for that? And how do you work out the long-term impact of that on those who are left behind, you know, their loved ones, their communities? they are going to have long-term trauma. And so how do we help them with that long-term trauma? How do we help them in terms of providing the resources? I know that there are several programs and projects that the government is working on in terms of addressing this, but I think we need to have everybody on board because we're talking about the whole country. We're not just talking about Abaco and Grand Bahama. Hurricanes are a part. Climate change is a part of this story. And so when we talk about the changes that we're going to face as a country going forward, we have to put a lot of emphasis on the impact, the long-term impact, the intangible costs of disasters on human life, on communities, on the nation, on national development, because it impacts everything.
It was very surprising after Hurricane Dorian. Our response was terrible. We wasn't even organized. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to believe that we so independent that we couldn't even be able to deal with, not say a simple situation like Abaco. Mm-hmm. It was devastating. We can understand it, but our recovery and our time response and deploying our, what you call, armed forces, you know.
Well, we have limited, I mean, yes, We can talk about, I don't like to talk about blame. I like to talk about solutions.
Let's not talk. I'm just using
that. But I understand, you know, people's analysis of what happened and
but
why.
If you're more community, like maybe we could do more for us a community base and more organized. Because I saw some guys, you know, they were using their boat and they were going host, the host on the roof. You know,
there was and that's how we are as people. We still look out to some degree for one another, and especially in times of need, in crisis. It's the long term that we're talking about. So, okay, the boats came, okay, the people came, the foreigners came, the NGOs came, the government did what it could. But no one could have prepared us for Hurricane Dorian.
No,
that was a supernatural storm.
An event, one of a century or a lifetime.
And so we have to grapple with the fact that there may be more storms like Dorian.
Yes.
And we have to prepare our country for those events.
Right.
And so it's the fallout. You know how we build homes in this country. A lot of us spend 25, 30 years building a home. And to be wiped out in an instant. And you know, you're in your 50s, you're in your 60s.
You can't start that over.
You cannot start
over. That's your pension. That's all your life saving, buying all the building supply. And the prices changed over the last 30 years.
And that's just the material side. You know, so, you know, your psyche has been impacted. Your mental state has been impacted.
Yes.
If you lost loved ones, that's, you know, that compounds and makes it even more complicated.
Yes.
And so those are the issues that I would like for us to address. How do we help to mitigate those things? How do we help to help people once we help them with the physical? We help them with rebuilding. How do we help them rebuild mentally? How do we help them become better functioning human beings in the mental health space?
Wow, that's awesome. When we're talking about mental health, I have this Chicago-based team that came to the Bahamas. Wallent Interruptus, some guys from Chicago-based. Kobe, he's in charge of this organization, and they brought him down to the Bahamas. And it was a good thing I went to that particular program with the government and the Rotary Club of East Nassau. They set it up, and they were talking to a person like myself as advisors and giving our opinion on violence, you know, like I was in the gang, and so they wanted my input. You know, that's my role for giving back. And when we was to the meeting, Ms. Starr, the guy said that violence is a disease, and it should be treated like a mental health issue. So when he said that, right, I said, hold on now. So I think back, based on the evidence that my aunt, my aunt them grew me up. My aunt, my grandmother grew me up. You know, my mom, you know, like I said, it was not family structured. My grandmother always was family structured, but my mother personally, she had no family structure. And she was on drugs. My father was in prison. And they said that a child, right, who parents were on drugs, they are called drug babies. Okay? And from inception, we already have a mental health issue. And we are supposed to be treated like It is a disease from the home, from the hospital, and from the government, because we already was, sick from mm-hmm. in my mother's womb.
From the womb, yeah.
And if you look at it, not to say no use, no excuse for the way I end up,
mm-hmm.
right? But they showed you that most children who come over single parent homes are more likely to be violent. You understand? So when you're saying all this is tying in, yeah. Mom. And yeah. what I'm saying is we need to treat mental health like a disease and violence like a disease. And so when we're saying mental health, that's one issue. Could you tell us some other mental health? I mean, you gave some mental health you talked about when your host get pushed down, how you're going to deal with this mm-hmm. and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Could you give us one or two more?
Well, depression. Depression shows up sometimes as anger.
Depression. What is mm-hmm. what is depression?
A depression is, there's so many technical, definitional ways of describing what it is, but it's a weight of feeling of hopelessness sometimes.
Hopelessness.
Of dark thoughts, of just not feeling balanced and right.
Don't know what your next move is.
Very heavy.
Trying to figure out how you could.
Very dark.
Make ends meet.
Mm-hmm. And so it's really a disease of the mind.
Yes.
A disease of the mind.
This yeah. also gets you sick.
It gets you
physically.
Sick. It does lead to physical illness. Yes. Mm. And so people don't often see, and it can manifest itself in so many different ways. Oftentimes, because we, as humans, love to perform that all is well, that we are doing well, that we can dress up in the morning and put on our clothes and walk out the door. And you ask someone, how are you doing? And they say, I'm fine. I'm doing well. But if you stop and you really ask them, how are you doing? And you listen, oftentimes they will tell you.
I know, it's so good.
I'm not so, yeah.
So by just talking, you take the time out.
You take that question and you ask them.
And they go open up.
Sometimes they will open
yeah,
up.
Yeah, because they feel you now.
Because
you
know, you're now empathizing with them. You're feeling you want to understand, you want to listen, and you want to show that you care. And so oftentimes when we were doing the interviews,
yes, ma'am.
At the end of, we started in September of last year and into October. Of last year, we went to Apico, we went to Grand Bahama, and we came to Nassau to look at survivors who came here, who relocated, in terms of how they were coping with relocation and being away from what they had known as, you know, their home, and how that was impacting their mental health. We found a lot of them talked about how it was still very difficult for them to talk about it. Some of them did not want to talk to us because it's still so difficult.
And they're angry as well.
And they're angry and depressed. And they feel abandoned. A lot of the feelings were of thoughts of abandonment, that the rest of the country moved on. And you still have a lot of people, as some of the survivors told us, sleeping in cars and sleeping in tents and sleeping
We heard the stories.
Sleeping in the bush. You know, they don't have any place to live to this day. And so when you talk about, as I said at the beginning of the show, when basic human needs are not met, you know, how could you be well mentally?
So you're trying to, what you're saying to us, all those people in Haiti now are going through all that stuff, they have a mental health issue.
There's surely a mental health issue associated with what is happening in Haiti.
So let me ask you a question. I can believe it when they say stress is the number one killer.
Stress is a part of mental health.
Stress, listen to this, people. It ain't gunshot, it ain't car accident, it ain't plane accident. The number one killer is stress. So what that means, that it breaks the body down, it makes you not eat proper, mm-hmm. it makes you think a lot, you can't focus. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And all that is all that stuff you talk about basically is stress.
Yes.
Thinking a lot. I see a guy, you know, he was looking for a place to rent. And he couldn't find no place. And I'd feel so bad. I don't want to let him come stay mm-hmm. in my place. But I have someone who I given a room to. And so I couldn't. And listen to me. I watch this guy deteriorate. Mm-hmm. You know, he deteriorate. I couldn't believe it. See, when I see him the next couple of days, he was like...
Stress, depression, anxiety, because you're worried. You don't have... Your basic human needs are not being met. So, of course, that impacts your health. That impacts everything. And so, you know, as I said earlier, we need to look at mental health as just as important as physical health. They're two sides of the same coin. If your mental health isn't well, and your physical health is not well.
So without your physical health, means you don't have your right movement, your hand, your leg, and stuff like that. That means... Yeah.
And if, as you pointed out, in terms of the rent situation, we have a growing homeless problem.
Big problem.
It's a huge problem. Have you seen the amount of homeless people on
all
the
over the streets of Nassau?
And it's not just Nassau.
On the family island too?
You can go to Grand Bahama, you can go to Abaco, you can go to many of the other family islands. Homelessness is growing.
And that don't bother our authorities to say, you know, let's come up with
I wouldn't say that doesn't bother people, you know.
It's not a major issue.
It is a major issue. I think some organizations are working to help. But it's multifaceted.
Yes.
It's how did they become homeless? What led to the homelessness? And there are many reasons why people are homeless.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, it's not one size fits all.
No, yes.
And so we have to understand the root of the problem and how to
address it.
And some problems cannot be solved the same way for one person as for the other person. You have to think about what is going to be best and how to address the needs of all of the homeless. I think I'd heard at some time, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know, the listeners, that we were building a homeless shelter. I'm not sure if that is still being built.
You mean a couple of homeless shelters? You can't build just one.
Yeah, we need, and that was going to be my next comment.
One?
And you need to now build them in more than one island. It cannot just be New Providence or Nassau, as we call it.
Just like we need more than one hospital now, you know. We need at least four or five.
We have so many social problems.
Yes,
and a lot of them start in the family.
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
and the family and how we communicate as human beings is at the core of so much of our interactions.
Okay, we're going to take this next call, if it's possible. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside the Inner City on Guardian Radio 96.9. They left it. I guess they left. Okay, they left. Yeah. So, Ms. Starr, when we started the show, we talked about the kids, you know, on how their parents talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they curse them, they hit them out of anger. You know, they go from 0 to 100. I'm going to personally say this to the general public. You know, it's the biggest problem we face today in this country. Because, like I said, you know, I live in the community, Mr. Dog. I have one son. My son lives in the States, okay? And he isn't a bad kid because I know how to discipline him. My son is turning 16 now, turning 17. And when he was staying with me before he went to the States, like, I was very aggressive. And this is when I changed my stance. Mm-hmm. See, I talk with myself first. I judge myself first. When they are, Mr. Dog, like, he was about 2 years old and I left him inside and I had him walking to the store, which I was only living myself, you know, so he was kind of laying down. And he's only a child. So how could I tell a child, how could I tell a child, stay here, I go into the store, don't move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you understand me? This is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I left, I went by Joe. This is about, he is like, I tell you, 17 now, so that's like when he was two or three. And this is like when I was getting on the gang and trying to get my life together and look at the family scope and see the mistakes I made and see I could change my life around and be a father and all that. But I still was lacking because I was not teach these things. You know, I didn't grow up with these things. So I didn't know.
Exactly.
So when I went to the store, so when I come and walk at Mark's store, I see the little boy in the road and in the car like, stop. So my heart stopped. Because my mind ran on him, and that was him, you know? So the woman stopped the car and she said, hey, what is little boy doing in the road? And me and my little stupid self, or my stupidity, or the mistake I made, I'm telling a two-year-old, then set the hoax, I going to the store. Now, I was going to get some store for me and him to get some snacks and stuff like that. But I still was wrong because he don't understand. He's not 16 or 17, so I was completely wrong. So when that happened, I came and I end up saying, I tell you stay inside. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say it in a nice way, Mr. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I speak with myself. See, me, I talk to myself, and if I'm going to speak to people on the radio, mm-hmm. I have to be able to let people know that I judge myself.
Yes.
And I'm not always right. Mm-hmm. And when I hit him, he fell on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman in the car looked at me, right? And when I hit him on the ground, Mr. I look in his eye.
Mm-hmm.
He was so scared. Listen, that look, when he looked up at me, Mr. And when he looked at me, that anger I had completely gone. I was so afraid because I looked and see the fear in his eye. Because when I hit him, he just looked up at me. And guess what he did? The minute I hit him, well, I was wrong. I was wrong for telling him to stay in the house. I was wrong for going to the store. I was wrong for hitting him. Okay? And you know what the little boy did? He jumped up and he hold my leg. I just hit him.
No, because he you're his father and he loves you.
And from that...
And the fear that you saw. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't believe this. That changed my whole perspective. That's that look. And I came home and I sit him down in the bed. I brush him off. I say, son, I look at him. I say, I brush his face. When I hit him on his shoulder. I brush him on his face. And my whole misdemeanor changed. And I made a promise that I never, ever raised my voice to him ever again. I said, I never, ever raised my hand to him ever again. Because my grandmother never did it to me. Mm-hmm. When my grandmother did it to me is when I did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And I made that promise to myself. And every day I live with it. You only one time I got mad one time. And he did something. But you know why I punish him? I say, you remember, Scoochie, what you said? I say, okay. Take his, what the game is. I had to buy him a game for his Christmas present when he come over. So I say, what? He ain't gonna listen, he ain't gonna clean the dishes. And me and him and you, I say, no game for you. And I say, I ain't giving you your lunch money to go outside to play unless you go wash them dishes. And you won't believe this. He ran in there. Said, that is to get it? I laugh. No, I say, okay. You go do it. I said, I ain't give it to you. So he said, well, hurry up, you get it. So when you go and clean those dishes and stuff, he said, Dad, now I could go outside. I said, nah, you go outside. You could go outside. You was outside late. I tell you come inside 7 o'clock because you're in the park. And I said, if you come here 7:10, you're not going to be able to go the next. But I know he just come to the Bahamas and he want to meet some of his friends from a long time. You understand? But the point is, the way how I punish him changed his way on how he did his work. He, mm-hmm. on time now, mm-hmm. he live in the States with his mom, and I give him $200 every month to make sure his mom, he helps his mom wash his clothes, wash his dishes, clean the houses. She had a problem with him, and I sit down, I talk with him, and I said, now if you could continue the same thing when you were small, now I don't have a problem with him. I never have to put my hand on him. It's different ways to punish kids.
But you shifted.
Yes, ma'am.
From violence.
Yes, because it hurt me.
To non-violence.
Yes, ma'am. It hurt me, ma'am.
And you learned the language of love.
It hurt me. I advise anyone, mm-hmm. don't ever, no. When you hit your kid and they look at you, everyone know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, people
and do. They still, the love, I mean, he still, what surprised me, you know, I hit him and he look at me and he still give, Daddy, I love you. That's what he telling me. And all I could do was take my hand and put it around him. And I lift him up and I walk at him now. And guess what? You don't believe, Mr. Dog? When I went inside, it's like my whole life changed. Because first I just watch him most get knocked down.
Exactly.
Right? Then I go on and I hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
Then I say some abusive words. Mm-hmm. Damn. Now I have to make up for all these things. But you know what the problem was? Me.
Yes. Remember what I said?
Yes, mommy did mm-hmm. say it. That's why when you said mm-hmm. I was laughing. Me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Me. Mm-hmm. So you know what I did now? Anytime I was leaving with the host to go to the store, even me. You know what everyone started to say? That's my twin. Because after that, I made it my business.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever I going out for a second, because I could go and leave him at the host could bring none.
Yes.
When I could say that, I used to go sometimes and sneak out and go get one little drink to the bar while I see in the bed when he falls asleep. I stopped doing all that because one night I come home, I meet him sitting up. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Daddy, huh? He is my responsibility.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
All these things, Mom, what you talking about, make me change the way how I deal with my son. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean my son like this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because you're showing what I'm talking about. Yes, you've made that shift to a language of love. You've compassion.
It changes you.
You are honest with him.
Yes, Mom.
You respect him. And you want to make sure that you protect him and that you show him that you are going to listen to him.
Yes, ma'am.
And help him become the kind of human being that he needs to be so that he can continue now your
legacy.
I'm
real
proud. Of showing compassion and love and learning that language.
You know what he told me last year? He gave me, this is the first time I saw him in 4 years because of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I saw him. He was so tall, I didn't even notice my son to the airport because he gets so tall. When he was leaving, Mr., he said, Daddy, Daddy, I want you to come live with me in the States. And he said, Daddy, I said, no, Daddy still want to stay in the mountains, but I can come visit you, right? He said, Daddy, I could go and I could take care of you. He said, when you get old, Daddy, I go look out for you no matter what, Daddy. You understand? You know how that make me feel? You know how that make me feel looking at him from a little boy now to this now? So, Mom, it's all, you know. Go ahead, Mom.
You have been, the transformation.
Yes,
the
Mom.
Shift. You've changed.
Yes, Mom.
And that's what I'm saying. We need to do that with ourselves. We need to take, you are willing to reflect on who you are.
Yes, Mom.
And self-reflection is a part of this because you have to be aware of who you are.
Yes, Mom, you have to admit
it. If you're not aware of who you are, you will continue to do the same thing over and over again. So you have to acknowledge who you are at the core and acknowledge when you knew, like in your case, that what you were doing
was wrong.
Was violent.
Yes, Mom, it was.
It was violent. It doesn't make you a bad person.
No.
It says that what you were doing to your son was violent.
Yes.
And that violence is going to harm him and injure him.
Yes.
And hurt people.
Hurt people.
And we see a lot of that
in
our society.
That's what's going on.
A lot of it is going in our society.
Yes,
and we, our society, and in terms of our culture, we like to blame others for the way we feel and for our thoughts. But as I said at the beginning, no one can make you feel. No one can make you think. You can't blame someone else for your thoughts and your feelings. That's you. You have to figure out what need is not being met. And once you identify that, you can begin the work to shift from blaming and criticizing and not being responsible. You became a responsible human being. Yeah. You took responsibility for your own behavior and your own words towards your son.
Yes, ma'am.
And I find that in a lot of our relationships, we do not take responsibility and we don't like accountability. We don't want to be held accountable for the things we say and do. Because we want to make the other person the scapegoat. The scapegoat.
Then take the pressure off me.
To take the pressure off.
Don't see the fault in me.
Yes. No, it's not me. It is.
It's that person.
Exactly.
Yes,
when indeed it is you. You need to do your own self-reflection. You need to look at who you are and understand who you are and why you want to do those kinds of things.
Why are you saying that? So I'm gonna end on this, but I'm gonna still let you talk. So I was talking to this female the other day, and she was telling me, she just come in this relationship. So, she talking. So she say, nah, she talking to the next guy. So I say to her, I'm asking you a question. You heard you just say this now? You just come in a relationship. I say, you heal?
Mm-hmm.
You still in communication with this next person who you involved with or break up with? She say, yeah. So I say, so what you gonna do now? You gonna go now and have sex with this next guy now? So what's gonna happen when you sleep with this guy now? You still have feelings for this guy, and now you say you're talking to somebody else and you wanna get back at him. I say, you're not gonna get back at nobody. The only thing you're gonna get back is you. Because you're gonna be stuck in this guy world now. Because this guy you're gonna deal with, you say you just meet him. I say, he probably have his girlfriend. Probably married. Probably have a girlfriend on the side. So what makes you so special? To think you can hurt this guy because you feel that you need to get by. I say, what you need to do? Excuse me, my language. I'm going to say this. I say, you need to keep your leg shut. I say, you need to keep your leg shut and focus more on healing and then look for that compatible person. I say, don't go put yourself in a position where you're done coming out of a relationship. Now you're going to board with somebody else. You say, you're making the situation worse. And they say, you know who to blame? Then I can hear you say, oh, all these guys. And I said, no. You're making the wrong choices. You're making an irrational decision. Mm-hmm. You need to slow down your road and think for a minute. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and then she started to say, you're trying to say, if I talk to this guy, I say, you just meet him. What makes you think he's single? Mm-hmm. You just meet him. He's single. You ask him any questions. If he have a girlfriend, you ask him if what he wants to do with his life, if he, how many future plans. You just going to go and meet a guy to the nightclub, and y'all have a few drinks. And because y'all have a few drinks, disqualify him, on his end, it might not even qualify you, because you might be not qualified enough to say, this is a woman who I can invest with. Now, I'm not being disrespectful to nobody. I'm talking on both sides. Mm-hmm. You understand where I'm coming from, Ms. Dahl?
I do. You're talking about people who are not, don't allow themselves to heal.
Right.
And they move from one situation to the next.
And make it worse.
And, you know, you take all of that pain and hurt with you. And, of course, as I said, hurt people to hurt people.
Yes.
You end up hurting yourself and you hurt others as well.
And you might have the person who loves you, but when you were so hurt, you would do the same. You would say, blah, but this girl, she just like the next one, or this guy, he just like them. But this could be the right person for you right there. But when you were so hurt,
yes.
You just would hurt people. Yes. Yes. So go ahead, Bob. You have a few more minutes. So let me tell you. We have 7 more minutes, so the show is your own. Go ahead. Go ahead. Let the show is your own. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we started talking in the nonviolent space,
yes,
nonviolent communication space, and it's connected to, as I said,
all
the projects that I'm working on, the gender-based violence, the gender inequality, how we talk to each other. And you just gave the example of the young lady. In relationships, how do we communicate in relationships? Most of that communication is violent.
Yes, it is.
In terms of how the words we use to describe or explain or to talk, the tone of voice we use, and those things do impact the kind of relationships that we have and the violence that we have in our relationships. So when we talk about domestic violence, a lot of that violence comes from the communication. Because we come to know ourselves through communication. We come to find someone that we say we like or we have feelings for or that we love through communicating our thoughts and feelings. And when those things become toxic and when they become harsh and when they become judgmental and critical and we're criticizing and blaming instead of looking at
solving the problem and looking at yourself.
What am I myself? What am I?
You gotta judge yourself.
What are my needs?
That's right.
And how do I get someone to understand my needs? So that we are focusing on the needs that we have instead of the wants. Because the needs rather than the wants.
The needs are more important than the wants. People don't understand the needs. What you need and not what you want is two different things, you know.
We have to identify our shared values and our needs.
What is important.
So that we can then, that will encourage us to use the kind of language that will increase good relationships. Mm. Because we will avoid language that diminishes or creates resentment or low self-esteem or because when you start using jackal language, when you start blaming someone else for your own feelings and your thoughts, you automatically are putting in barriers and walls because that person, you have made them the bad person. You have made them the person that's doing the wrong when indeed it is you who are not getting your needs met and you're afraid to reveal that, to be vulnerable, to tell someone, well, this is what I need and this is how you can help me meet this need. If you say it this way or if you do something this way, if I feel angry, if I feel uncomfortable, if I feel hurt, say that instead of saying, well, why you say it like that? You don't listen to me. You're immediately attacking the person.
You're right.
You're immediately making them feel less than. You're making them the blame when it's, boy, you're not really addressing my needs. I need you to listen to me because when you listen to me, then I feel as though you are understanding what I want or what I need in the relationship. And so when you do that, you help me in terms of inspiring me to want to connect with you more, to want to share my thoughts with you more, because I now feel safe and trusted. You know, it's a safe space. But when I don't feel safe, when I feel as though my needs aren't being met, then I'm going to go to the language of aggression. I'm going to go to the language of violence to cover up my hurt, to protect my vulnerability, rather than being open and honest with you about what my needs are and how you can address them, how I think you can address them. And if you find that the person cannot, as in the example of the girl, she might have a need to connect with someone. Human connection is a part of one of our basic needs. And when you have that need, you want to express that in certain ways, healthy ways, and not, as you said, having a relationship that you just came out of without healing, going to another relationship because you feel the need to connect with someone else and you don't want to be alone, because loneliness sometimes hurts.
It does.
Yeah, and we're afraid to say that when we are lonely, we are hurting. I don't want to be alone. And that is one of the things that we as humans need to recognize, that our needs should be addressed. Our values, our shared values, these are the things that are important in relationships, whether
yes,
it's
ma'am.
Between father and son, whether it's between two partners, mother and son, mother and daughter, church members, co-workers, whatever the relationships are. As humans, we need to understand the needs that we have so that we can address them in an honest and open way and do it in a compassionate way so that there is the feeling of you empathizing and understanding and loving instead of always having an agenda, always using a language that is very aggressive, because this is a very competitive society. And in competitive societies, the language is often very violent, because everyone is trying to get ahead in some way or get over. I hear a lot of that, getting over on someone, getting something from someone.
Getting even.
And then the revenge. You talked earlier about the level of violence by gangs, the revenge killing, you know, getting to the heart of why the need for revenge. You know, yesterday's story about the two brothers in Elutra is very disturbing. You know, your response is to take something and stab
your brother. And two, y'all came with the same womb or same father.
Something has got to be, so, you know, what made you do that?
So let me ask you a question. How do you think that brother feel now, who stabbed his brother, now that he's in police custody?
I would hope he feels remorse. I would hope he feels that he has done something, taken the life of his brother, and that there is remorse there. That's my hope, that he actually feels that he knows he has done something that harmed, hurt another human being, so much so that it ended up taking his life. And so that is where the remorse comes in. That is where hopefully that will transform or change or shift him from being a violent person to learning how to love. Because at the core of it is not knowing how to express the hurt that he felt when his brother, whatever his brother said or did, that caused him to react in that way. Because it's really dealing with your own hurt and pain that you have to deal with first.
Wow. I'm just amazed to have you on the show tonight. You was the right person to have on the show, and I'm glad we met. We're going to continue to meet, and I'm going to continue to invite you on the show.
Yeah.
You're just a breath of fresh air on the show tonight. I'm sure that the former students, those who are listening, had a wonderful time listening. You want to say something before we go? We completely out of time. We did a whole hour and a half. The time went fast, but we covered a lot of topics and we still get a lot of details there. So we could always make a, you could always make a reappearance. You got my number. The show is open to you. You want to bring some people to come talk about the program and their future. You want to get some sponsors. Yeah, this is open for you because you did such a wonderful job here tonight.
Thank
and you know exactly what the country needs. You want to say anything before we go, Ms.
Well, thank you. I hope we become more compassionate people. I hope we become more loving people. I hope we learn the language of love.
Wow. And I think that's the key to our society. You know, for me, I changed my life around. I was very violent. I changed my life around. And you know what I feel? I feel that I'm a different person now. Okay? My life is completely different. You understand? I feel I could go anywhere. I could talk to anybody. People are happy to see me. People are happy to meet me. You know, it's just amazing. You know, if you change your mindset and start to focus on the positive.
Yes.
Now, and you all said this before, because you said, not the wanting, what it is?
The needs.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And you are a perfect example of transforming to the language of love.
Yes, ma'am.
Because you saw the need to do that.
That's why when I talk.
For you and your son.
Yes, ma'am. And that's why when I talk about Haiti, I talk about it from a compassion standpoint.
Exactly.
I understand the situation we face in the country when it comes to illegal immigrants coming in. But I understand, again, that we all human. We have to understand that we must never, ever lose that. Despite what's going on in the country, we must never, ever lose our compassion.
And our humanity.
And our humanity. Okay? I want to say thank you, Ms. Starr. Well,
thank you for having me.
It was wonderful to have you. Let me thank you for coming on the show tonight, because you made the show a real wonderful show tonight.
Thank you. Very entertaining,
very calm, and very loving show tonight, you know? So I'm really appreciative. I want to encourage you to keep it up. And like I said, the show is open to you. You have my number. And I'm sure that many
others. We will be back because we have to continue the projects that I'm working on.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So thank you very much.
Thank
and
you.
To the entire Bahamas, I hope you enjoyed the show, Inside the Inner City. I'm your host, Valentino O'Brien, host of the talk show, Inside the Inner City, that premieres every Friday at 6:30 to 8 p.m. We'll see you a week after next, because next week is Good Friday, so eat a lot of fish. Enjoy yourself, okay? And then we'll be right back here, God spare life. Week off the next Friday. Okay? Enjoy. Drive safe. Okay? Good night, everybody.
Good night.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. I represent Bahamian people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, big up Baton, bro. Boy, I from Baton, bro. Right between West and Augusta, where them two roads meet, they call it Wilkinson Street. Manners and respect was like a sign blank check. It seems the ones that come in after quick to disrespect. You see, this life in the ghetto never easy. So many hungry days break, tell it grieve me. Boy, I doing the best I can. Trying to turn my dollar to $100,000. I represent the ghetto people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, big up Baton, bro. Boy, I from Baton, bro. Ghetto, ghetto.